what really touched me and why I want to help is the very first day that we were there, there was an elder, and I mean a real elder.
More elder than you?
Yes, more elder than me. And she had run out of water. This Darlene has a tanker truck that she fills every day, and she takes it to the people, the outlying people. They get water once a month. But if you run out of water, then you have to come in. When we got there, I almost cried because this older lady came with an old junkly car, and she had some water jugs, and she ran out of water, and she was getting water. We helped her get her water and loaded it back up in her car, and she went back. But she was raising her two little granddaughters. Her son, I don't know, was gone.
This is Yaj Monen, and I'm Kyla Kathnedu. We're a podcast out of the Pokagon tribe in southwest Michigan and northern Indiana, and we're telling stories of our people reconnecting with culture, reviving traditions, and reclaiming their heritage. Yaj Monen means story in our language. So here's another. Jeannie Millett was watching the CBS Morning News when a segment came on about the Navajo Nation in New Mexico. It revealed that more than 40% of the families living there are without running water, miles away from even a well. With the reservation covered in dirt and sand, when it rains, that ground turns to mud, and residents can't really get anywhere, not even to a water supply. The woman Jeannie mentioned even moves closer to town in the rainy season so her grandchildren can get to school. Residents are dispersed across this vast reservation, so one woman decided to start bringing water to the people in a 4,000-gallon water truck. Her name is Darlene Arviso, and when Jeannie saw her on TV, she decided to do something to help. She thought she'd start by buying a second water tank truck, like Darlene uses.
Little did I know how much the tanker cost.
How much?
I went to Sister Lakes, because that's where I live, and I went to the fire department, and I asked them how much a tanker cost, a water tank truck. And they said that truck, they have one, of course it's new, $300,000.
Wow.
Well, originally I thought maybe I could get enough money to get another truck,
right. But
I think this well thing is better than the truck because it can continually get water where the tanker couldn't.
Jeannie wrote up a request for aid and sent it to all 12 tribes in Michigan, asking for a $10,000 donation from each to fund water systems for homes in remote areas of the reservation. Each water system costs $4,500 and are run on solar energy because many homes don't have electricity either. The water itself is so difficult to come by because the land where the Navajo Reservation sits was a uranium mine for 42 years, and the mining left the ground deeply contaminated, so wells must be dug even deeper.
And I hope that I can get more people to donate to get water. When I told you I couldn't get the water truck, I can't ask another tribe for 20 or 30,000, but I can ask them for 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 will buy a well. And 10 will help 20 Indians, at least 20 Indians,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Forever.
Where the truck would only give it to them for 30 days.
Right.
And so I'm glad I didn't get the truck. So now I'm going to try the Oneidas. I'm going to try the Ho-Chunks, and I'm going to try the Winnebagoes to see if they will help me too.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to help each other. That's what it's all about. We got to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they need water really bad.
Jeannie drove from Michigan to New Mexico with a friend. Jeannie's made the trip several times, but her friend wasn't familiar with the area. As they neared closer to the reservation, Jeannie's friend started asking about stopping to shop for Native jewelry, as you do. And Jeannie knew just what to look for.
So we're going down the road. It was a raggedy old sign, and it said fry bread. So I says, okay, there it is. I says, we're going to go there. So, of course, we got off the road. We went there. Sure enough, it was. And they had a small gift shop. They had beautiful stuff, beautiful, all handmade. And it was run by one of the elders. and her son. And she was selling fried bread to make money. So, of course, I got fried bread. But what I wanted to tell you was, she was telling me she was so grateful. She got $100 last November. $100. Mm. And she says, I am so grateful. She said, I got me a turkey and I got me potatoes. And we had a nice Thanksgiving dinner with my $100. And she says, and what does your tribe do? And I says, our tribe does a lot. And I says, we have plenty. And she says, oh, but she says, did you get a turkey? And I says, well, I will. I says, but we get things. But I didn't want to tell her, you know, make her feel bad. And she says, I can't wait till next year. She says, I'm going to get the turkey, but I'm going to get a cheaper turkey so I can spend it for something else. And I says, oh, and I know these, because I've been out there before. I know these Indians don't have much, but she was so grateful that she got $100. And here we have people that get more than $100 and are not grateful.
Did it really put things in perspective for
you? Yes, right. I know that they are, you know, because I've been out there before, and it just breaks my heart. And she didn't ask for anything. She didn't do anything. And she was going to give me an extra fry bread. And I to eat on the way, and I told her, I said, no.
39 boxes of clothing awaited Jeannie at the Catholic mission stationed on the reservation. She sent them ahead of herself to give to people in the Navajo tribe. She carefully watched to ensure they'd be given to the people, then met up with Darlene. She was finally going to see this for herself.
She said, one well makes a difference. They usually give it to the elder, and then when the elder gets it, all of her children move in around her. So you don't help just one person, you help probably 20, because they all move in because they want to share that water. How this started was the Catholic Church went out there to start a mission, and of course, they had money, and they dug and dug till they dug past the contamination. And when they went past the contamination, then all the Indians moved in around them so they could connect to the water. And so there's a little settlement there so they can get water. But the ones that didn't come in, like the outlying areas, like where this little old elder came from, they have to have their water trucked into them.
I wanted to ask you about when you went with Darlene on her actual route, just what that was like and kind of what you did on that.
Well, we got in her truck. It was like a four-wheel drive thing, and it was a path, you know. But I want to tell you this. It's so funny. My girlfriend was with us. She was sitting in the back. Darlene's driving. This is really funny. There was some horses and some dogs, and Darlene stopped. And the horses went on by, and the dogs. And she says, oh, here, the animals have the right of way. And so you have to stop. And I said, oh, okay. You know, and it makes sense. Then we went on. They're not close together. There's one family here, and then they got to go probably 2 or 3 miles. And then there's another family. Then they go again, and it's another 2 or 3 miles. And it's not, they're not together. But when they get water, like the one we went to, the older lady, she had the water, but her son and daughter and her grandkids lived there so they could get to her, you know, get to the water. And they take care of her. And it was kind of brought back memories to me because I was raised, we didn't have anything either. And it was a one-room house, it's a Hogan, and she had her bed in there and her gas stove and her sink and refrigerator. A small refrigerator, and she was sitting there because she only has one room, and she was sitting there doing beadwork. And I asked her, I said, okay, so now you got the beadwork. I says, where do you sell it at? And she says, when I make up enough jewelry, my granddaughter takes it into town and stays there all day trying to sell the jewelry. And that's where they get their money. And it's so sad. That's why they beg you to, you know, to buy their things. I wanted to buy everything that they had, you know. And I almost did.
You're wearing some of it.
Right. What standed out to me was they never complained. Never complained. They never said, gee, I wish I would have sold this, or gee, I wish I had this. Nothing. Nothing like that. Very grateful people. It was just amazing.
And how are some of the ways that they conserve water for up to a month at a time?
The one lady, because Arlene wanted me to see how they when they put the water in, she's got a little tiny sink, and there's a faucet there, but she has to, there's a contraption down here, a little cupboard, mm-hmm. and she has to open the door and turn the water on. And then when, if she wants to wash dishes or something, she has to flip a switch to heat the water and just leave it and then come back an hour later. And then she says that because she tries to save the water, she doesn't put it in the sink. She puts it in a little container, not a container, but a little, like a little
bowl-like
thing. And that's where she washes her dishes to save the water. But I wish all of our people could go and see how they live and never complain, never complain. You know, and I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back. I mean, I got one last hurrah in me. I'm going to go back, you know.
Jeannie can relate to this poverty. She grew up with little, and thankfully our tribe, the Pokagon Band, has thrived since then. But the obstacles and struggles of living in this society as a Native American are in many ways the same, or at least very similar.
When I was a child, it was always, oh, the Sioux, the Navajos, the Cheyenne. I always called them storybook Indians because the white world never knew us Pokagons. They always thought the Indians out there. But we are here too, and we're all one. That's what I say, we're all one. Mm-hmm. And we got different tribes, but we all go through the same thing. It really depresses me that even now we're put back on the back shelf. We're not, it's like we don't matter. We're second class citizens. When I was a child, my father told me that he said, one day we'll rise again. And I keep thinking, when? The only thing I can explain is maybe the casinos, that the people come and we have money. Maybe that's what he meant. But I keep waiting for that day to come, and I'm 74 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for that day that people will really understand who we are. And I guess that's why I help everybody, because I want them to know that we will help our own people. You know, I want to help our own people. We are, Pokagons are so fortunate. And it's not just the Pokagons, it's all of us. We are so fortunate. And these people don't even have water. And that's why I do what I do. There's a lot of things that I've done, you know, but so what, you know. I want people to realize that we as Native people are all one. We're not just, oh, Pokagons, you know. I wanted to say everyone. And I think that we all should help everyone.
Jeannie's raised $20,000 for the Navajos, half from the Nottawaseppe Huron Band of the Potawatomi, and the rest from an anonymous business here in Dowagiac, Michigan. The money has all gone to the Navajo Water Project, and that group has raised more than $545,000 with the goal of bringing water to every household in Baca, New Mexico, the town where the reservation sits. You can see how to get involved and just see the amazing work they're doing on NavajoWaterProject.org. Paige Risser and myself produced this episode, and I edited it. Our music, as always, from the talented citizen Bobby Lynn. Thank you. Next month, We'll be back into our opiate awareness campaign, and you'll be hearing from Thomas, another citizen who survived opiate addiction, and not just opiate, but alcohol addiction as well. But until then, Bama P, be with you again.